The Ragtop Club exists to enjoy and celebrate ragtop and open cars from all periods, from the earliest veterans to the newest electric models. If you're sitting in the elements with the wind in your hair, then we are interested. You probably have the rain in your hair as well, because this is England, but wherever you are in the world, tell us about your ragtops. In Europe, figures show Germany beats the UK in cabriolet sales, but we're there at number two. And anyway, think of the thousands of beautiful convertibles that are already out, parked in British garages, waiting for a sunny day just to get out on the road. That, of course, is the problem with, and indeed the reason for, the popularity of convertibles in the UK. We have to make the most of every day of sunshine, because they are so rare. In Italy, some say it can actually be too hot for a convertible. The Ragtop Club would never admit this is remotely possible. But it's easy to see that a country where a sunny day is unexpected, anything that helps you enjoy it more is to be valued. We're not all winter cabrioletists, although many of us are. Does driving with the roof down in the height of winter show great commitment to the cause of soft-top motoring? Or dangerous lunacy? It's a close thing. What is important is that we love cabriolets, and we presume you do too, or you wouldn't have downloaded this podcast. How each episode will pan out, we don't yet know, but each one will be ragtop based. That's literally all we know. If you want to join in, get involved, drop us a line. That's how we like to play it. So, we're recording this episode just after the disappointment of England yet again losing a big test match. That's a cricket game for those of you outside England who don't know. This one was at the Adelaide Oval. They're playing in Australia. They've gone 2-0 down in the Ashes. That's the competition between England and Australia. This would be bearable if England hadn't done what England always do, which is play really, really well for part of the match. You know, if they played really badly all the time, you would think, well, okay, that's what happens. But they don't. They play really well for a few moments. And I thought, yet again, hang on, this time we're going to dig us out of the hole we've dug ourselves into, and we're going to beat the Australians. Didn't happen. So how to cheer ourselves up? Well, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to ponder the automotive beauty of the SS Jaguar 100. This is the great running boards and wire wheels sports car built in the 1930s. A great time to be alive. Well, if you're in England and had money to buy sports cars, not such a great time to be living in other parts of Europe, but we won't go into that here. Well, we could, but a digression into Nazism and the rise of Hitler would take a lot longer than the time we've got planned for this podcast. And anyway, whilst Hitler was concerned over the channel, back at home, car builders were doing what their name suggests they were doing, building cars. And they were building great cars. So SS Cars, who were they? They were a company based in Coventry. They were possibly called SS after the Standard Swallow or Swallow sidecars, although no one really knows. What lots of people do really know is that SS was not a good name to call anything in 1930s Europe. Be a bit like calling your product the Osima a few years ago. And so the name of the company was later changed to one you will probably recognise better, Jaguar. But when this car was made, the company was still SS, although Jaguar was added as part of the name. This car was called the 100 because of its top speed, a whopping 95 miles an hour, which isn't quite 100 miles an hour, but it's close enough for the advertising standards in those days. It's fast enough then. Or what am I saying? It's fast enough now. Back then, it must have been staggering. Without the traffic, the laws and the cameras that affect speeds nowadays, it must have been an exhilarating ride. Now, we're interested in the beauty more than anything else, but a few technical details just help you picture this car more easily. It had a wheelbase of just over 8 feet with 18-inch wire wheels, half elliptical spring suspension and rigid axles. I've said all that as though I know what that is. I don't really, but never mind. The engine was a 2.5 litre with a power output around 100 brake horsepower. Again, I don't really know what that means, but I like to pretend I do. In 1938, a 3.5 litre engine was dropped in, increasing the power up to 125 bhp. The 100 had a 4-speed gearbox, and the whole caboodle weighed in at 1,150 kilograms. It's a car I'd like to have now. Back then, it must have been absolutely stunning. Now, it cost £395 to buy one of the early examples back in 1937. Now, is it interesting to calculate what that is in today's money? I'm not really sure, to be honest, but I've done it anyway. So it cost the equivalent of £20,000. which doesn't sound that much. Particularly, what's amazing is that buying one of these hundreds a day would set you back. And I had no idea what it would set you back because I'm more interested in the beauty of these things than what they cost. But I've just done a quick Google search and it costs hundreds of thousands of pounds. How annoying, because as I've been researching this, I've been thinking, this year I'm definitely going to get one of these cars. They're beautiful. But unfortunately, beauty isn't enough. Now, there were only 314 of them ever made, and that's contributing to this absurd price rise. But £395 to several hundred thousand is a pretty good investment. So anyone who bought one in 1937 thinking, well, I'm not going to drive this, I'm just going to keep it in good condition and sell it in 2017, made a very good decision financially. Oh, they would have lost out though on not driving it. So these SS100s really are beautiful examples of 1930s motors. I'm not so taken with the huge headlights, but the curving wings and the mudguards are delightful. Now, I've managed to find the original adverts for the car. So how was it described to potential purchasers? Well, thanks for asking. I'm going to tell you. This is the phrase they used on their adverts. With lithe grace and a capacity for sustaining high speeds with effortless ease, this is the ideal car for the open road. Nevertheless, the powerful engine is extraordinarily flexible and will easily negotiate all ordinary traffic in top gear, with abundant power in reserve for rapid acceleration. Superb road holding, light but positive steering, and brakes of the highest efficiency allow full advantage to be taken of its magnificent performance. Features include 6-cylinder OHV engine, open bracket £15 tax, twin carburettors, 4-speed synchromesh gearbox, fingertip control, 7-bearing crankshaft, super powerful Girling brakes, underslung frame, Berman Douglas steering, adjustable for height, full all-weather equipment, large luggage accommodation. Price, X Works, £375. £375? I've read before it's £395. It was even more of a bargain than I thought. So they didn't hold back in their description, which manages to combine highfalutin claims with highly technical information that was presumably meant to blind purchasers with science they could admire but didn't understand. I'm judging there by myself, who has no idea what a Berman Douglas steering system is, what an underslung frame adds, and how many bearings are normal in a crankshaft. I'm particularly amazed by the claim that the SS100 could easily negotiate all ordinary traffic in top gear. What is this ordinary traffic that can be negotiated in top gear? The sort of ordinary traffic we have around here is very much negotiated in bottom gear. Did you know that the average speed in London today is, wait for it, 16.5 miles an hour? And in central London, it's only 7.4. 7.4 miles per hour. To put that in context, in 1900, the average speed of a horse-drawn carriage in London was 8 miles per hour. The average speed today is actually less than in 1900. This isn't what progress is supposed to be like. Sorry, I'm digressing. I'm just wishing I could experience some of this 1930s traffic. It must have been great fun driving then, even in the very centre of town. Now, these cars were the first to carry the Leaping Jaguar badge. And though they looked like aristocratic runabouts, they were very successful race cars, winning international rallies in 1936 and 1937. In the hands of Tommy Wisdom, it beat Bugatti in the international trial and appeared at the UK hill climbs. What a sight it would have been to see it racing up the hill at Shelsley Walsh. Oh, those lines are not just elegant, they sing with exuberance. That lengthy louvered bonnet is just the best design for a car. Surely once the SS100 was created, all other car manufacturers should have said, well, that's it, we can never improve on that. And then Jaguar should have come to some sort of agreement and licensed the design to everyone else. And then all cars since then should have looked like the SS100. That is surely how things should have been. Oh, if only. Although I suppose if that had happened, we would have missed out on some of the other brilliant designs that we will celebrate in coming episodes. It's just that over time I look at the SS100 and I think, yes, that is superb. Just what a car should be. Nothing extra. It even had something that you will discover I find a holy grail of soft top motoring. The fold flat windscreen. That alone is something that would make me buy one, if I had a spare £500,000 lying around. Although if I did have a spare £500,000 lying around, I probably wouldn't buy one because, well, you can do so much good with a spare £500,000. that I probably would feel that buying an SS100 wasn't really... Oh, who am I kidding? Of course I'd buy one. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that it has that wonderful thing, the folding windscreen. You might not know how difficult it is to find a car that has a folding windscreen. Nowadays, with the windscreen being integral to the body and acting as a roll bar, it's almost impossible. But to be able to fold the screen down and drive with the wind in your face is fantastic. It's even better than a motorbike because you don't have to wear a helmet. There is nothing better in motoring than driving a soft-top car with a folding windscreen. Although the air has to be warm, so it's only really possible in England between about the 7th and the 11th of August every year, unless we get one of those odd hot autumns we sometimes have, when you might also get a couple of unexpected hours in October, such are the vagaries of the British summer. So anyway, that's the SS100, a great-looking car, then and now. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please join us next time. And thanks to Salmo for the music.